The Louder Than Bombs podcast.
Casual MC Hammer.
Casual 10-year-old who thought you can't touch this was pretty cool, I guess.
Did you ever wear the pants?
No.
My mom, a long time ago, I remember when that whole kind of scene was out there, and she bought me these really crappy baggy pants, and I'm like, I don't want to wear these. Yeah, you do, Paul. Everyone's wearing baggy pants. She was a heart in a hard day. She was a missing your mistake. No matter what she take, never gonna forget. She was a tear in the rainstorm. She was a promise that she would have sworn. So the Arcade Fire won a Grammy, Best Album of the Year, and we had talked about this before. I hadn't seen the performances by them yet, and you have.
Yeah.
So you told me they were pretty amazing.
Well, they were. I don't know if I'd say they're amazing.
Oh, they were amazing. Okay, I'm sorry.
They were good. What was amazing about it was how bizarre it was to see that on television.
Right.
That's what it was. That was so, and to see them be so nervous and excited, and you're just not used to seeing that on TV anymore. It seems like everything you see is measured and flat emotionally, kind of.
Right.
Or ridiculous, or like American Idol, where they're weeping and they're they're convulsing and they're all hugging each other like they just saved the world. It's either too far or flat, and they just seemed genuine. It was a genuine moment of shock and surprise.
Right. Well, I think it's funny because we had our podcast where we all, that was the only album we all agreed upon that was, you know, in our top five. And I remember saying that I just wish there was more, you know, push behind the album, and I think it would be a more popular album because of that. And it's funny because I'm wondering how winning a Grammy for them does any of that. Obviously, it's going to a little bit, I'm wondering how much it really does in the end. I mean,
probably not that much.
You don't think so? I don't know. It's funny because it seems like an important album, but I don't think a lot of people share that view.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, after we talked about it and all the top, you know, 10 lists of all the critics and websites or what have you are on there, do you think that it deserves more or less? What is your opinion change of it at all?
The thing about popular music today is that I don't think we're going to see consensus anymore the way we saw from the late 50s through to, I don't know, a few years ago. Where there's a consensus where people say, yes, this is a great album, and this is a great artist. I was just reading, you know, how the South by Southwest just happened?
Right.
So I was reading some of the stuff about it, and I was reading Greg Kot, the rock critic, Greg Kot, his blog, and he was talking about Bob Geldof, you know him?
No, I don't know.
Bob Geldof, the guy that did Live Aid, and the guy that's in The Wall, the actor that plays
Hank, okay.
The Wall, and he was in the Boomtown Rats.
Oh, okay.
He gave this big speech at the South by Southwest thing, and he was saying that there weren't any, where are the great bands, where are the bands that are going to change the world? And he was saying that he thought, like, it was the band's fault or the people's fault, and Greg Kot was saying he just wasn't looking enough, and I think there are many great bands now, but they're just not going to be, there's not going to be a consensus anymore. I don't think there can be a band anymore that will, in a sense, change the world the way a Bob Dylan or a Nirvana or groups like that did.
Do you think it's because of the internet?
I think that's part of it, but I think when you combine that with what happened with the music industry and with the whatever the mega multinational corporation way that it is now, it's you combine those two things. The thing that gets put out that's the most popular. I mean, I hear popular radio because of my job.
Right.
I hear popular radio. And there are artists that are popular with a lot of people, and people sing the songs. Mm. But those artists now are so, they have so little to say.
Right.
And it seems to me it's destined to be that way. I mean, even on pop radio, you don't hear very much Kanye West.
Really?
No, not at all. And I hear one of those stations, and one is the same as listening to all of them all over the country because they're all run by the same people anyways. They all have the same playlists. You hear a lot of songs like that Dynamite song, or you hear a lot of Katy Perry, you hear a lot of Rihanna, things like that. And I'm not even saying that somebody like Rihanna can't have a good song or something. She right. can, but there's not much substance there.
All right, so let's go on some record reviews. We had one of our reviewers, Ryan Tremaine, who couldn't be with us today, but he gave us an album to listen to, and that would be Manchester Orchestra. And the album is Mean Everything to Nothing. I'll kind of speak on Ryan's behalf on this, because he's one of my best friends, and I know why he chose this. This album is a good blend of rock and solid, you know, pop melody. And it mixes, I think it mixes, not genres, but stylings of harder guitars and, you know, pretty guitars and lots of keyboards. And it's a pretty diverse, I think, sounding album. So I think that's why he likes it a lot, and it's why he wanted to kind of review it. And they have a new album coming out in a couple months that we'll review for the podcast. And this is a good precursor for that. I know how I feel about it, but I'm really curious to see what Andy thinks about it. Andy, what do you think about this record?
Well, during our last podcast, I felt like I was the one being the most negative, you know? Which I don't like to be. I don't want to be that kind
of a
person.
Negative. You're not a negative person at all. That's
yeah.
But you are. I don't think you're negative, though. I don't think you gave that impression. That's yeah. me.
But you know, I have to give my honest reactions, my subjective reactions to the music. Now, I guess what I would say about it, it's very slick.
Yes.
It's very competently played.
Okay.
And all of that. There's no problem with any of that. You're right that it's very mixed, and I would say yes, it mixes genres a lot. Too much for my taste. The first song, when I had never heard this group, so when the first song was on, the only one, I thought they were going to be like a Britpop group. Because that's how that song kind of started.
Yeah, and then
it almost turned to like a post-grunge album. As it goes, like the next few songs are very hard rock type riffs, sometimes almost Tom Morello-ish.
Really? You think Tom Morello?
Riffs. Huh. One song, the song Pride, thought almost had a type of Tom Morello kind of stuff. The song In My Teeth, I thought the beginning sounded like it was going to be something off Nevermind. The riff, like the power chords riff. And then the album gets very, it gets more and more mellow as it goes.
Yeah, it's true.
And I found it to be a bit, for my case, kind of like melodramatic. I thought some of it almost was like My Chemical Romance or something.
Really?
Not as heavy as that, but, and then they do the quiet, loud, quiet thing, and to a point where it's just like every song.
Every you know song I mean? Is like that.
Like the verses are quiet, and then the choruses are very anthemic. I could see like why people would like it, but this type of more traditional songwriting, rock songwriting,
right?
It's just something that for a long time now, I just it doesn't keep my attention at all.
Did this album ever? Did you ever feel compelled? Like, oh, this is actually not that bad, or was the whole thing just? Every song you're thinking, okay, I'm ready to hear the next one. Is that kind of what it was? Like, it's not bad, but I'm just not feeling it. Was that the whole feeling you had?
Well, the way I would sum up the album is just, it's just not for me.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, I didn't think like, oh, this is terrible. I didn't think anything like that. But it never grabbed my attention once.
And you think it's because of its, the fact that it's simplicity of the, you know, loud, quiet, loud kind of thing going on?
The song structures some of the lyrics, which I could see certain people relating to. It sounds like the guy's trying to be confessional and stuff.
No, yeah, he is. I read in a review of this album that I don't know where the quote was directly from, but it was said that the lead singer referred to this album as Pinkerton on steroids, which I thought was a very loaded quote. I didn't know how to really take it when I read that, because I had seen him live before, and I had already heard the album for a while, so it was interesting hearing that and then already knowing what the album is. I thought he meant musically for a second. I just thought, man, that guy should never have said that. But then yeah. I kind of thought, well, I think he means actually lyrically, because if you, I think everything he's saying sounds pretty hard on his sleeve. From because it doesn't seem far fetched, but it's, there's a lot of imagery in it. But it seems like pretty obvious what he's talking about to me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I think the album is actually is a solid album for me. It's, I mean, if you like just to kind of rock out and to, you like power chords and like distorted guitars and somewhat catchy melodies, it's, I think you'll enjoy it for the most part. It's not, I mean, it's a serious album. You know, I think anyone who would say it's not, I think is kind of not smart, but I think that's kind of the main killer for it. It's a little melodramatic, like you said, that you can't really, it's hard for me to get behind something like this because I don't know where he's coming from. And it does borrow so much from other genres and specific artists that you can't really help but kind of go, okay, I get it. It does get repetitive at some points. But I listened to this a couple times again recently, and I really do enjoy it, though. I thought, it's funny, I say all these things and I sound like I'm just bashing it, but I do like to listen to it. I like the song Shake It Out a lot. Mm-hmm. It has this ending kind of bridge thing where it kind of went from like, it's kind of loud and then it gets really cool with a little guitar part. It kind of reminded me of Modest Mouse a little bit, actually. And then it kind of goes back into the main, you know, rock out part. And the one thing this album does do well is they mix things up a little bit that's, I wouldn't expect that they're able to pull off. They're able to pull it off a lot better than I think other bands could. And because this is their only second album, I'm really, really intrigued to see what their third album is. I think that's the kind of deciding factor for me, this band. I had the first two albums. Me and Ryan saw them on a tour with another band, and we bought the first album. We thought they were really good. And the first album just did not sound sonically very well. Like, I think the songs were there. They were okay, but the sonically just was not, it was lacking any kind of power, which I think this album is kind of compensating for that a little bit. It's so big and produced that it's almost too produced.
Yeah.
They can't win, right?
The thing with the Pinkerton on steroids, the reason why people love those first two Weezer albums is, I mean, they sound good, and it was a new, somewhat new sound that they did, at least for it to be in the mainstream, that sound that they had, and the vocals, which still, to me, the Weezer vocals would be better than this guy's vocals.
Right.
But also, they had humor, and I didn't get a second of humor in this, not for a second. Pinkerton, when you have Pink Triangle and Tired of Sex, which I think is the best song they ever did, the songs are confessional, but they're funny at the same time, and it's one of the things that makes Pinkerton special, I guess.
Yeah, I think I totally understand what you're saying with that, and I do sense that you're right. If they had maybe made it, I mean, I don't know how you would do that. It's hard to put humor in a rock song where you're trying to also like be a confessional. I mean, that's what makes Pinkerton so special. And with this band, it's so like it's like he's pouring everything ever he's ever felt depressing or any kind of view he thought negatively, he was just throwing out on this album, and that's where it kind of comes a little too much. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine this is all this one guy's, you know, 2 years of, you know, bad times. It sounds like it's just something he's been weighing on for a long time, and I'm just going to throw everything on this album that I've just kind of been pissed off about or feel bummed out about or whatever. I don't know. At the same time, I do enjoy it.
Yeah, if you like, you said, the kind of guitars, the distorted guitars and power chords and all that, the guitars sound enormous on it. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But that type, I thought, you know, they must worship 90s alternative rock. And
I do. That's the thing with me and Ryan. I know Ryan is one
and
of
I do,
people.
I do not.
See, that's so weird to me. Cause that's your area, man.
Well, when I, even growing up in the 90s and being a part of the music in Seattle, at the same time, I grew up just as much with music from the 80s and the 70s and the 60s, because I always wanted to go back. So I never, you know, I liked the Smashing Pumpkins and all that kind of thing, but I liked other groups more than that at that same time.
Right,
you know?
Weren't as hard or, yeah.
And I like guitars, but not this kind. Not the power chords and that kind of thing.
I got you. All right, so if there was one song on this album, Andy, that you did enjoy, that you want to share, what would that be?
The song I enjoyed the most was probably I've Got Friends.
All right, and I'm going to pick the song Tony the Tiger. I've got friends in all the right places. I know what they want and I know they don't want me to stay. I said that I've got friends in all the right places. I know what they want and I know they don't want me to stay. Moving on, we have my pick, DeLorean, and that album is called The Unfazed. Now, to give a little backstory, I have liked this band for a long time. I have all their albums. I've seen them live probably 4 or 5 times over the last 6 years, 5 years, whatever. And they are a solid kind of, I wouldn't say they're alt country. Would you, do you think it's kind of alt country?
Yeah.
I guess it's an alt country feel.
Yeah,
they put out an album called Not Exotic that I'm really into. I think it's a fabulous album, and I just kind of stuck with them ever since that. And they haven't put out a terrible album at all. And the last one they put out, I felt, had a couple songs that just they weren't their strongest on that album. And that album was called You Can't Win, which the title track of that album is amazing. Anyway, that album had a couple songs I just was not feeling. I was really intrigued to hear the new album when it would come out. And it had been almost like four years before they came out with the new album. And I remember when The Unfazed came out, I was kind of thinking, I did some research and I just thought, well, what took them so long? And they had actually started recording another album before The Unfazed, and they stopped production of it because they just didn't like where it was going. They decided to take a break, which I thought was kind of interesting and kind of cool. I mean, they were knowledgeable enough into the music enough to know we gotta stop this right now because this is just not, our hearts aren't into this. It kind of made me really want to listen to the album even more after hearing that. Thinking, you know, maybe they have their batteries recharged, so to speak, and they're ready to go forward. So The Unfazed comes out, and it was funny because I thought I ordered it on vinyl. My girlfriend ordered it for me. She actually ordered it on CD instead, which I thought was interesting. So anyway, the album to me, I don't know. It has a very, the funny thing on this album is they added another guitar player that kind of, they always had like, you know, second guitars in their songs, but they actually added a guy to, you know, on every song, a second guitar. Because usually it's just acoustic, Rhodes, drums, and bass. Now it's another extra electric guitar. It just made the sound way more fuller on the whole entire record. I really liked the production. It seemed like the band was really, they were really set in and tight together on this album. I don't know if all the songs are really, really great songs, but I really did enjoy most of the album. I love the first title track, Thin Skinned. I think the best song on the album is definitely Fool's Gold Ring. I love I love the song Country Clutter. I love that song. And I don't know, I think the album itself is, it's funny, it kind of goes with the Pacific Northwest kind of resurgence of folk country scene, which is sad because this band's been around for a long time. And I don't know. I just, it's an album I can't help but like, but I'm not sure if I'm just being biased because I love the album so much, or I love the band for a long time. So I don't know. Andy, what did you think?
Well, my first question would be, how's this album? Because this is the only album I've ever heard by them.
Really?
I have like a, they did something with Damien Jurado where he played one of their songs and they played one of his. I have that. That's all. That's the only thing I'd ever heard by them. So is this album more or less intense than their other albums?
It's a little more intense compared to some. I think that the themes on this album are way more intense, I think, more than the music itself. I mean, the music itself is a little more intense, but it's not like it's it went from a 2 to a 10. It's more like a 2 to like a 4 or 5. And okay. So it's a little more intense as far as music goes. I think the lyrical content is a little more intense. And I think, like, whereas My Favorite Album by them, Not Exotic, is a little more prettier. It has a little more, just, there's not as much rock on it. And then they kind of get a little more rocking on their albums as they go. This is definitely it's a little more aggressive, I'd say. A little, the most aggressive. And this isn't that aggressive either, so.
Yeah, it's not. That's what I was wondering if they had been more aggressive before, because I think the thing I thought about this album, it's nice sounding, okay, right? Totally. It's warm and everything, the sound of it, the production's nice. I certainly like this album more than the other one. but at the same time, I couldn't find enough intensity in it. And I love some folk music. Like, okay, for example, of a newer artist, I like The Tallest Man on Earth. Some people don't like him.
I've kind of avoided that for some reason. I think it's because of the whole, I'm sick of folk music and
well, so am I.
You see, yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
I'm sick of acoustic guitars and everything. But at the same time, I actually really like The Tallest Man on Earth because I like his melodies and his lyrics. And actually, he has some nice guitar playing. He doesn't usually just do straight chords, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, he has nice finger picking and stuff like that. But his songs are nice, and I like his lyrics. And there is, even though the music is mellow, there's an intensity to it. And I couldn't find the intensity. Even, I thought the song that was the most intense was only because the lyrics. And that's that If I Find Love song. Where the lyrics are, like, it had kind of cool lyrics. But the guy, I'm not, again, like, if you have experience with the band, and, you know, like.
Yeah.
I never thought, like, oh, I don't like this band, not once. But I did think, man, this guy just seems so, so mellow.
He is, yeah, he's a really mellow dude, I think, as far as lyrically. I don't know, I think it's funny because when I first heard Thin Skin, the title track, which, that has a little more intensity, I think, to it. Did you like that song?
Yeah, I mean, but again, it wasn't, I mean, the part of, by far, on the album that I enjoyed the most.
Right.
Was on the Hardworking Dogs song.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like the instrumental little riff thing they do after the chorus. I was like, oh man, why don't they have more parts like this? Like, I thought that was real nice, but I didn't find that kind of stuff in the other places.
Yeah, it's funny because when I first heard Thin Skin, the title track, a little more rock, and I thought, man, they went a total different direction than what I was expecting. Oh man, it got me really excited. And it kind of made me think, oh man, this is going to be way different than the other stuff. Oh, this is great. And then the next song, Country Clutter, which I really like, just was standard DeLorean. And I like standard DeLorean, though. Like, I love that stuff. It was kind of disappointing for a while. I just kind of thought, man, I was kind of hoping they'd go more in the vein of Thin Skin. But as I didn't really like it, I thought it was okay. And then I kept listening to the album for some reason. And then all of a sudden, I started to really enjoy it. And I don't know. I think it's... You have to find its place, and it's definitely mellow. It's not meant to be intense at all. I think there's a lot of beauty in these songs though too. I mean, I think Fool's Gold Ring is just it's one of my favorite songs of the year. To be honest, I'm not sure. What was your feelings on that song?
I mean, as I was listening to the songs, I just didn't find enough to differentiate. I don't know. So I also have this thing where I don't like standard chords on the acoustic guitar.
Really?
No. It's just like I don't like power chords. I don't know what it is.
You don't like power chords?
No, I don't.
Wow.
Unless it's, you know, like a Ramone song or something, or a Sex Pistols song, you know? Like, what I would say about, like, the album is just, it's nice, you know? But me, at the point of life I'm in and everything, I'm just not, it's just doesn't, it's not dynamic enough.
It's you know, it's not something you can walk on the beach to and with someone you love and just enjoy it. It's something you have to be kind of in a place in your life, I agree, to reflective. It's a very reflective sounding album, I think.
Yeah, but not vulnerable enough, or not ragged enough emotionally. Like if I wanted to hear something like that, I would listen to some of like Bonnie Prince Billy's songs.
Right. See, that's the problem.
And that's more intense. It's more, but it's very mellow. Or I listen to Smog.
See, that, and that's the thing with these bands and with all these resurgences in the Pacific Northwest that it's really hard for me to get behind, because there's so many bands before them that do it better and did it before
yes,
them.
That's
and,
right.
And that's, and DeLorean, I like I said, I think their best album is definitely Not Exotic, and that to me is a little more creative and original than anything they've done afterwards. I think everything's kind of an extension of like the band or Bob Dylan or whatever folk artist, you know, folk kind of band you want to, you know, insert here, Neil Young. But I think Not Exotic has a way more atmospheric sound to it, and this is a way more straight ahead like rock band with, you know, a folk singer fronting them. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, when you can listen to Bonnie Prince Billy or said bands like Bob Dylan, the band, Neil Young, I can listen to those bands anytime I want. And unless they can up their game, meaning the artists that who are influenced by them, it's hard for me to get behind that. Where's their unique voice? And I will admit, yeah, DeLorean doesn't have a super unique voice all the time. But I do think they have elements there.
This is why also, the person who supposedly, I read in the Seattle Times a little bit, they had an article with Damon Jurado, and they called him the
godfather of Seattle music, folk
yeah,
music, right?
And it's just the thing, but the thing about Damon Jurado is he does, okay, he's folk, whatever, but really, but he's not at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds nothing like Bob Dylan or the band. That's what's good. I mean, if you listen to the first two band albums, that's just as good as it gets. I mean, they're unbelievable.
See,
they're so good.
I can't get into the band. I have the Brown album and Music from Big Pink.
My gosh. Those are so mystical to me out of this world.
I can't get into them at all. It's funny because, you know, I have friends who are hugely influenced by those albums. And they told me, get those albums. I bought them, really excited to listen to them. And they did absolutely nothing for me. The Brown album is the best of all their albums, I think. I actually can find enjoyment in that album, but not something I can listen to all the time, anytime. I know that makes me weird and makes me stupid, I guess, but, you know, not from you, but from other people. But
yeah. I mean, those two albums for me, the two, I discovered those about 10 years ago or something, and I can't even put into words the feelings I had when I listened to those. It took me to a totally different world. And of course, you know, Bob Dylan is pretty much one of my very favorites.
I love Bob Dylan.
Yeah. This you know, this actually goes well if we're going into the next album.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
No, and shit, what song did you really like from this album?
Andrew? I got just because I really thought it had a really nice instrumental riff, the Hardworking Dogs.
Okay. And I'm going to go with Thin Skin.
Drunk sailors, wild as pure lightning, joy each morning. It's the middle of the night and your phone keeps ringing. It's your new life. I'll do my best to see your point of view. If you can do your best to try to see that I'm not such a bad guy, I'm just a little thin skin.
On to our last album. This is an album I was not expected to like or even tolerate, and that would be the new Bright Eyes album. And what is it called, Andy?
The People's Key.
The People's Key. Now give me, what's your backstory on this album?
Okay, I have a backstory with Bright Eyes, which I'm almost embarrassed to say. not because I don't think that he's a decent artist, but just because of all the baggage that goes along with Bright Eyes and Connor Oberst and Saddle Creek and all that thing.
It's a loaded gun for sure.
Yeah. But it's just like if you talk about Vampire Weekend or if you talk about the Strokes or groups like this, let's leave the baggage aside and focus on the product, the creation,
yes,
if we can.
Okay.
But I heard Bright Eyes 2001, I guess, when the Lifted album came out. And I thought the album was exciting, and I think it spoke to me the spiritual questioning is something that I value from him. Something that before this album, his recent albums, he just totally lost and just rambled about, I don't know what, his last few albums, Bright Eyes albums and his solo work and stuff.
Right.
Sometimes I think, you know, is the guy become permafried or something? Or is this like what we saw happen with the 60s artists going into the 70s where they just lost it?
Right.
I've wondered that about him. But anyways, I think that Lifted is a good album. And it has a few, I think, fantastic songs. And I like the production style. I like the way that the Mike Mogis guy worked in lo-fi with high fidelity and all kinds of different stuff on that album. And then I did not like the last Bright Eyes album, Casadega. I actually cannot stand it, even though a lot of people like it. The more traditional he went, to me, the worse. The more folk he went, or singer-songwriter, the worse he got, in my opinion. Right? I actually like some of his electronic music more.
It's funny because we're actually gonna have a full episode dedicated to Bright Eyes because I have so much history with this, to be honest, that I'll give it to you short and sweet. I've hated Bright Eyes for a long time. I'm just gonna leave it at that. I'll explain why on a different episode, but I have a huge hatred for this man. When you told me you wanted to review this album, I just kind of said, okay, I'm just gonna go into it, and I'm gonna come into it with a clean slate because he's kind of fell off the map, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what has he done?
He's done several albums, but by himself and
I mean, like, no one's talked about it. Like, no one cares about him anymore. And it's, when I say that nobody cares about him, I mean, like, he's not a critical darling anymore. So I don't hear about him all the time.
I remember when he came out with the two albums on the same day.
Yes.
Right? I remember AllMusic.com, their main editor, the Stephen Thomas, I don't know how you say his last name. He's really good, but oh my gosh, did he tear into those albums. Like, almost to where it was slanderous of him as a person, Connor Oberst. And I think those albums are all right. I like the electronic one more than the acoustic one. But
yeah.
I can understand. There's a lot to not like. His voice, some of the lyrics being overly pretentious. But the thing about him that I appreciated was that I like the spiritual questioning. See, for me, I just think that young people, and to hear a guy who was 18, 19, 20, 21 asking the big questions, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear, if I'm going to hear music from a young musician, I want them to be angry and questioning, like punk rock. I want that. I don't want them trying to be cool or talking about romance or things like that. You know, I want to hear, I think the strength of youth is the questioning.
Right.
And I like that about him. I will say, though, with him, over as I found more and more music, like when I heard Neutral Milk Hotel for the first time later, it actually kind of lowered my view of Bright Eyes because I actually kind of thought he probably took a little from Neutral Milk Hotel.
He took from a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I already knew that he took from The Cure and that kind of stuff, but now I saw that mixed, that weird folk kind of sound,
yeah.
All the different instruments and all that. I'd never heard that before.
Right.
But then it's like how, same thing I feel about Ryan Adams. Once I heard more and more Wilco, the worse I thought about Ryan Adams. And the more I heard Uncle Tupelo, I just thought this guy's total just copier.
Okay, let's lay off Ryan Adams now. We don't get off too off tangent here because I like Ryan Adams a lot. So go ahead.
But I kind of thought that way about Connor Oberst. But now I kind of look at his whole career. So far, he's still 27 or something like that.
Is he about my age? I'm 29.
I think he's 27, I think. And I think he's done pretty good for a guy's age.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, he's tried a lot of different things. And so let's talk about the album.
Well, yeah, I mean, the album to me is, I'll be honest, going into it, I own Fevers and Mirrors and Lifted. I actually own those albums. And again, the stories behind those albums, I'm going to save for another day because it's going to be a lot of fun talking about that, to be honest with you. So I'll be honest, I went into it and I said, okay, just let's see what he's got. I actually like this album. I can't believe it. and I think it's like what you said earlier. It's because he took away the folk elements and all the pretty acoustic, quiet parts, I think he took out of his music for me, and he inserted it with a more pop sensibility, and it's a little more straightforward. There's less going on in the songs, instrumentally wise, I think. When you add that pop element, and it almost sounds like new wave music to me.
Sure, yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed it. Huh. When you add the keyboards with electric guitars and his voice, on this album is not the that I'm always used to. It's a lot more toned down. And instead of being this really, really shrilling vocal, it's a raw vocal still, but it's way more contained and it's not so all over the place.
Yeah.
Which I think rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. It's funny because I listened to the album and I couldn't believe how much I enjoyed almost every song, and how by the time it was done, I kind of thought, wow, that was short, sweet, and to the point. And I can't believe that's almost everything anti-Bright Eyes that I thought of before.
Yeah.
I don't know. What was your first impression?
Well, I got to say, just starting off, first impression, the first thing is this guy who's talking on the album.
Yeah. Who is that guy, Andy?
I've read about it. I guess he's some musician from Austin, Texas or something that lectures on aliens and stuff. Like, when I heard...
That kind of makes me disappointed, to be honest.
Well, one thing that Bright Eyes has always done well is have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, in Fevers and Mirrors, when he does that interview at the end of the album.
Oh, God.
It's funny. I think it's hilarious.
I don't know. See, I don't know if
it's a joke. It's a joke.
But you can't tell because it's so... He's so dramatic. And so
no, it's a joke. That's why he put it in there. It's just a joke. And I think it's really funny. Obviously, the guy who's interviewing... It's obviously not even a real show. It's just some guy that must have been his friend or something. Anyways, I enjoy when he puts in kind of stuff like that. And... The only thing, though, I get annoyed by people who talk like this guy.
I love the way he talks.
The thing is, at the end of the album, he says something beautiful at the very end.
Like, I love it when he goes, I'm not a kid that guy's ass. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah. No, it's funny. He sure puts a lot of weight onto it, though, by starting and ending the album.
Right.
With this guy talking.
Totally.
Which I think I guess it goes along with the album. But anyways, as far as the music and the album go, I think the album is good. I agree exactly with what you said. It's good pop, new wave sounds. It doesn't have as much weight as you might expect.
No, yeah.
Right? I think it's almost, it might be for me too light, but I will say, with the exception, I think this album absolutely... It goes up. It goes to a whole other place in the last two songs. To me, the last two songs make this album like worth getting. Like, everything at the beginning is good. The songs are nice. I actually think the song "Approximate Sunlight," which starts off kind of not so good, but then it has this awesome chorus, like dark, cool chorus. Haile Selassie has got some cool guitar work and stuff.
That's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good.
Off the album for sure.
But then the last two songs, one is the song where he just plays the piano and it sounds like it could have been on an old Bright Eyes album.
No, yeah, totally.
Latter song.
Right.
That song, there you get like the sensitivity and the vulnerability that I like about him. And it's the first time I've heard it from him at all since
Lifted.
Since certain spots on the two albums after that. The ones that came out on the same day. There's certain moments on those. But it's beautiful. I read about it. I guess that song is about his one of his friends there from Omaha that killed himself.
Latter song?
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you, especially hearing it from that perspective, it's a very beautiful song towards his friend. And it's sad. It's a sad song.
No, totally.
But it's, yeah. But then, the One For You and One For Me, it has this awesome drum beat. Really nice. The whole album actually has pretty nice drums.
Right. Well, it's almost like a drum machine a lot.
Yeah, it's...
It's very,
yeah, they're those almost dance rhythms, right?
Yeah, they're not. That's what kind of makes it, with that and the keyboards, those are the elements that make me almost feel it's very new wave. Because the drums aren't doing your standard like rock beats. They're doing like very dancey, very, it just seems so straight. It almost sounds like it's from a keyboard or whatever.
Well, if you look, that's one thing about Bright Eyes. He's had a lot of nice, either rhythms in his songs. If you go to the Lifted album. I didn't think the song was the best, but the one that was the single, the I Want to Love Her, I Don't Have to Love. Ugh. That song though, it has an awesome drum beat, and it that's like the song. Best thing about the song. The song is annoying, although I could talk some about the lyrics of that song.
I just can't wait. We'll have to have this Brian's episode like next because
we can go into those albums and talk about it. I'll say this though, he has two songs. Well, I better save this for the next one, I guess, for the Brian's. Okay, but this song, one for you and one for me. I got to talk a little about the lyrics of this album.
Yeah, do it.
This song. The thing about Conor Oberst is if you're going to listen to him, you're going to expect to have some lyrics that are going to catch your attention, right? In any of his albums, especially when he's at his strength. He's going to have some questioning lyrics about life and society. And I like to hear from some younger people who are looking at the world and trying to make sense of it, and looking at being an American right now, and looking at religion, and all the sexuality, all these things. And I think he's pretty decent at that. And the thing about this album, he has seemingly gone more and more kind of new age, whatever you want to call it, over the last 5 years in his albums. His solo albums are so boring, I can't even tell you. But anyways, but this one, like, what's the reference over and over again on this album? Did you catch the main reference?
I think, you know, I probably couldn't listen to the... I honestly probably didn't listen to the lyrics enough, to be honest. When I listen to an album, lyrics are one of the last things I absorb the most.
No, I understand. And I do that, I'm the same way, but with him... I'm interested in what he has to say.
See, that's the thing is, I've hated his lyrics for so long. I thought he was so overrated in his lyrics that I just focused on everything else but his lyrics for the longest time. And after listening to his album, probably like good 5-6 times, I just started listening to the lyrics a little more on the final time. I don't know. I just like I said, I didn't want his lyrics to hinder my opinion of the album.
Well, understandable. The main thing that caught my eye about the lyrics is he has a theme that he returns to over and over again, and it's different terms from Rastafarianism. He's talking about the I and I. He talks about it over and over again, all the way through the album. And he ends the album with this idea, where he says, you and me is an awful lie. It's I and I. And so I was going into... I actually read some more about that, the I and I concept, and it's in Rastafarianism, this idea of I and I. It's this idea where you're referencing like yourself, but your union of you and God and humanity.
Wait, so is he Rastafarian now?
I have no idea. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he's just picking up things from everywhere. You know?
Yeah, good point.
It's interesting because the last album he's talking about, the last song, he's talking about all these paradoxes.
Right.
He's talking about here's one for I can't remember the lyrics exactly, but he's like one for the tyrant and one for the slaughtered lamb and one for the certain and one for the real confused. He's just saying, he's showing like all these differences of humanity.
Right.
And then he's saying, but it's not this whole thing of us being separate is a lie. We're actually unified, which now... how true is that is another discussion. I thought there was a certain beauty and peace that comes in that last song that I didn't expect. And then I even though I could have some questions philosophically about some of it, it's cool to hear him in that place, actually.
Right. Yeah, I think that the themes of Conor Oberst I've never been interested in. So I take everything at really, really face value. I don't think it's super obvious what you're, you know, obviously if you dive into it, you can find it. But and I think on other albums, it's usually pretty heavy-handed what he's talking about and what the themes are. And I think with this album, it's so straightforward that you can overlook that easily. And I think that's why I like it a lot more than his other albums.
Yeah.
And that's why it's the most enjoyable. It's because he kind of incorporates everything that he's good at and he finally does it subtly. You know, like his estranged vocal, it's more subtle on this album. his themes of his lyrics his lyrics are solid on this album, but they're not heavy handed where you're like, oh my god, I get it, dude.
you know what I think it is? I think the song that reflects what you're talking about, all the negative of Conor Oberst, is it's all there in that When the President Talks to God song. Remember that one that he released?
I don't.
It's terrible. It was terrible, and it was when everybody hated Bush, and it was just like so stupid. But so just like
what obvious. Was it for?
I don't know.
Was it some single?
Oh, it was just a single. Yeah, he released, and of course, it got a bunch of press when it came out. Oh, it was after Lifted, and that. You know, my favorite song by Bright Eyes of his career is "The Arc of Time." Do you know that song?
No, what album is it from?
It's from the Every Day and Every Night, the electronic one.
Oh, okay.
And that album, and oh my gosh, it's so beautiful, that song. And it's in the spirit of this album. It's more electro pop, new wave-ish, with really, really cool rhythms and percussions in that song. Right. And that's the way for him. Let go of the acoustic and
yeah, that's what makes this album so good, is that the use of hardly any acoustic is perfect on this album. And the fact that the fact that the vocal is the main focus, and the everything else is pretty like, what's the word I'm looking for? Everything is not complicated. It's so simple and just layered very nicely. It's his best flowing album, to be honest, I have heard.
And even though it's simple, but there's some real, real nice guitar playing on it. No, real totally. Nice little riffs and little, just, but they're not overwhelming, like you're saying. They mesh with the keyboards really nice.
I think that's what's missing in a lot of Brightest songs, that not everything meshes to me on, and again, like when we do our Brightest episode, I can really, you know, dive into that a little more, but this album is probably the first one that I've heard that I really think everything actually has a coherentness that doesn't dive, you know, bomb from each other on certain parts and on certain songs, where you have one feel for one song and then all of a sudden the next song is completely a 180, and it's just annoying. There's a continuity on this album that he has, and I love, and I actually love it. The use of keyboards, which I love keyboards, I'm a huge fan of keyboards, does help enjoy the album a lot more.
It's funny, you might actually like it a little bit more than me.
Yeah, I
like it, but you sound a little more enthusiastic than me.
I do. I think what's funny, Andy, is you like the songs I don't really like.
Yeah.
Like, The Approximate Sunlight is, I don't think it's a bad song.
Look, it doesn't start off cool, but that chorus.
No, yeah, it's a good
song. Awesome.
No, and Ladder Song and the last couple songs, I think they're okay, but the best songs for me are the one that gets a little more, like, up tempo, and you can kind of rock out a little more, and it's, and you hear, and the guitars, that's when they're shining the most, is when they're doing the more up tempo stuff.
For me, yeah, anyway. I think as far as those kinds of songs, that Jejun Stars and the Haile Selassie, those two,
oh my god, those are
real nice. Those are they're good.
And those are his lyrics where I'm like, wow, he can actually write a pop song, and it's not complete horseshit. go ahead, sorry.
You need to go back and listen to Arc of Time, that song. That's his best pop song he ever did. It's so fantastic.
When we do our Brightest episode, I will totally dive into all his whole discography, and we will talk about it. Andy, what song are you choosing for this album?
Yeah, I'll do the one for you and one for me.
Okay. And I think I'm going to choose, Haile's, what is it called?
Selassie. See, Haile Selassie, that is the Messiah in Rastafarianism. That's the name.
Awesome.
That's who that is. That's the Rasta thing right there. That's the guy that Bob Marley and all those guys were waiting for to return to save, you know, redeem the world.
One for the tyrant, one for the slaughtered lamb. Too good to be true.
thanks for listening to the Louder Than Bombs podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to ltbmusicblog@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.